You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, November 14, 2018.
I think probably this time of year what's most important in terms of how the community can engage is clothing. So making sure that people have proper winter clothing so that they can handle the elements when they're outside.
Wet winter weather is on its way to southern Indiana as overnight temperatures regularly drop below freezing. Area residents experiencing homelessness are often at risk. WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar speaks with Shalom Community Center Director Forrest Gilmore about the increasing need during the winter in today's feature report. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, area residents are reporting hundreds of fraudulent calls from Chinese scammers. More about those calls to local numbers on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County election officials are verifying ballot tabulations in the Monroe County Council District 2 race. After voting closed on November 6th, an error was discovered in the program that reads the data collected from ballot scanners. The program was reading the race as undervoted. Voters are meant to vote for only one candidate in each county council district race. But as Monroe County Election Board Chair William Ellis explained, the program was reading the race as if voters were supposed to cast three votes, like they would in a township board race, for example. In addition, if a voter voted for both candidates, both would have gotten votes. Ellis spoke in last night's election board meeting.
The ballots were marked correctly for vote for one. But if somebody made an errant mark and marked two, that ballot would still be accepted. So we are going to, I will get a judicial order for the recount, but I will be doing that.
Ellis said election officials wanted to make sure straight party ballots were not affected because straight party voters still have to cast individual votes in vote for three races. A test conducted during last night's election board meeting revealed no problems.
So what we're looking is one vote for every candidate on the ballot. And if we look to County Council District 2, we have one vote for each. So straight ticket votes were counted for that. So that alleviates a big concern.
Democratic board member Carolyn Vandeweel added that stray or errant marks could also complicate vote tallies.
When we tabulate on election day, we do review every overvote to see whether or not we can determine what the intention of the candidate or the voter was. You know, in some cases, there's clearly marked and then there's a little scratch or something in the second one. We can deal with those. In other cases, people literally voted twice with exactly the same mark. Those ballots actually are tossed, or that particular race is tossed from that ballot because we can't determine what those people wanted to do. Yeah. And so the only case in, or scenario in this case that would change that vote would be in the case of an errant mark.
Right.
And that's statistically rather unlikely, mm-hmm. but we do need to find out.
Election Supervisor Karen Wheeler said vendor Hart InterCivic had a similar programming error with its electronic voting systems back in 2014.
Hart InterCivic put it as a multiple choice. Now, when they set our ballot for 2018, that same data entry issue followed us into 2018. William Ellis, who is the Republican chair, was aware of this in 2014, so he wanted to be sure that it didn't happen again. And surprisingly, it had happened. Hart had not corrected it.
According to Ellis and Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown, Hart InterCivic has taken full responsibility for the programming error.
It was nothing that could have been caught in pre-ballot checking because the ballots were marked correctly. It was just a behind-the-scene thing. It does happen, and it's how it's handled. It's how it's judged, and Hart has done a good job of handling that. And Nicole may have more.
Right. That. Thank you for that, because that's important to me, is that there was nothing that could have been done differently by the clerk's office or Monroe County to have picked up on this error. And I am incredibly grateful to Hart for stepping up and agreeing when we wanted to be transparent and have a recount of that race out of an abundance of caution, just to make sure that everybody knows that everything was on the level. Hart agreed to pick up the tab for this, so this will in no way translate to a cost that is transferred on to the taxpayers. It will be completely absorbed by our vendor, for which we are incredibly grateful.
Allowing for time for the judicial order to come back, Election Supervisor Wheeler said it could be mid to late December before a recount is done. However, she said the candidates understand a recount won't change the race's outcome. By the current count, Democrat Kate Wiltz received more than 6,000 votes over her Republican opponent, Ann Collins. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill, acting on behalf of the state, is filing a lawsuit against Purdue Pharma. The complaint filed this morning against the drug manufacturer states Purdue Pharma should be held accountable for his, quote, key role in the opioid epidemic in Indiana. Attorney General Hill's suit claims Purdue Pharma should compensate Indiana to help pay for the effects of the ongoing opioid crisis. Purdue Pharma develops prescription drugs, including OxyContin. Now, OxyContin is an opioid that was introduced to the U.S. market in 1996. Purdue's initial marketing campaign claimed the drug was less likely to be abused than other prescription opioids. Clinical trials did not prove the drug was less likely to be abused, however. After 5 years after its introduction, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration challenged Purdue's claims about OxyContin, forcing the manufacturer to remove their claims. OxyContin, sometimes referred to as Oxy, became one of the most prescribed painkillers in U.S. history. According to a Government Accountability Office report in 2003, it also became one of the most abused drugs in the country. The Center for Disease Control reported about 300,000 people died of prescription opioid overdoses between 1999 and 2015. That report also details the opioid epidemic as consisting of three waves, the first being widespread prescription drug abuse, like the overprescribing and marketing of drugs like OxyContin. The CDC says much of America is facing the latter two waves of heroin and synthetic opioid abuse, including drugs like fentanyl. The CDC reported last year the opioid crisis killed more Americans than automobile accidents. The City of Bloomington and the City of Indianapolis also filed separate lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies earlier this year. The lawsuits claim the municipal bodies are entitled to compensation for pharmaceutical companies' alleged malfeasance.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill was elected by his peers this weekend as the vice chair of the Republican Attorneys General Association. The election comes as the embattled Attorney General faces repeated calls from lawmakers and fellow Republicans to resign. Hill is accused by four women of sexual harassment and sexual battery after he allegedly groped them at a legislative party in March. Three of the women are legislative staffers in the Indianapolis State House. One is a Democratic lawmaker. Hill denies allegations that he inappropriately touched the women. Indiana Governor and fellow Republican Eric Holcomb has called on Hill to resign. Hill refuses. The Attorney General's election to the Republican Attorneys General Association signals his intention to run for re-election. The Indiana University Law School graduate was elected to the state's highest law enforcement position in 2016. He assumed the office in January of last year.
A Catholic high school guidance counselor who was fired after her marriage to another woman was outed is expected to announce a lawsuit against the school tomorrow. Shelley Fitzgerald's marriage led to her termination at Roncalli High School in Indianapolis. She is expected to announce a lawsuit against Roncalli and the Archdiocese of Indianapolis at a press conference tomorrow. In a press release this afternoon, Fitzgerald stated, quote, "The event is in response to Roncalli High School and the Archdiocese of Indianapolis making it clear by words and deeds that further negotiations between the parties will be futile," unquote. Fitzgerald worked as a guidance counselor at Roncalli for 15 years before she was suspended in August. Roncalli administrators at the time stated, quote, "As role models for students, the personal conduct of every teacher, guidance counselor, and administrator and staff member, both at school and away from school, must convey and be supportive of the teachings of the Catholic Church," unquote. Fitzgerald will be joined at tomorrow's press conference in Indianapolis by Indiana's first openly gay lawmaker, State Senator J.D. Ford, who was elected to the Northern Indianapolis District last week.
Bloomington-based singer-songwriter John Mellencamp is set to play a special concert celebration in December. The Indianapolis Star reports that Mellencamp will play a solo acoustic set as part of the 40th anniversary celebration for the Tibetan-Mongolian Buddhist Cultural Center in Bloomington. Mellencamp, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame musician, also announced an engagement to actress Meg Ryan last week. He's expected to release a new album on Friday. Tickets for the Tibetan-Mongolian Buddhist Cultural Center event go on sale this Friday. Tibetan Buddhism spread to Mongolia in the 13th century. Chinese and Soviet crackdowns led to the Tibetan theocracy's exile in 1950. The 14th Dalai Lama and the leader of the Tibetan government in exile has visited the center, located on Bloomington's southeast side, at least six times since its founding in 1979.
City of Bloomington Utilities will be installing a storm sewer on Mitchell Street as part of a sidewalk replacement project. Utilities engineer Jane Fleeg spoke on the project at last night's Utilities Service Board meeting.
Mitchell Street, we get a lot of drainage complaints along Mitchell Street from Maxwell to Circle Drive, and we feel that it's important to get some storm infrastructure in there because none exists when they're building the sidewalk.
The city will install sidewalk on the east side of Mitchell Street from Circle Drive to Maxwell Drive. Fleeg said there's one obstacle with the project. The new sidewalk, curb, and storm sewer are slated for the same location as an existing CBU water main.
It is a 1960s age water main, probably due for replacement anyway, and we believe that the storm infrastructure in this location is important, so we were willing to do that. So it's written into this agreement that we will take care of the water main relocation. We will pay up to an amount of $45,000 for the storm sewer installation, and then the Public Works Department is going to come back in and repave that section.
The board approved a memorandum of understanding between the utilities department and the city on the joint project. Construction for the sidewalk project is slated to begin by early 2019.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Friday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Colder temperatures and precipitation are expected overnight and through tomorrow. As winter sets in, those experiencing homelessness and housing instability are often at risk of injury or even death. WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar reports the last recorded death of a homeless individual occurred in 2013. Still, every winter, hundreds of people seek warmth and shelter at area service providers.
Recent drops in temperature can exacerbate the problems faced by those experiencing homelessness. The National Healthcare for the Homeless Council says hypothermia can set in at anywhere from 32 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. When it gets cold, body heat escapes through the skin and internal temperatures can drop to dangerous lows. In Bloomington, the Shalom Community Center provides shelter, hot meals, and winter clothing for the area's homeless. Executive Director Forrest Gilmore says that as the cold approaches, that need grows.
We're hitting winter once again, and that creates life-threatening conditions for people as we get into these freezing temperatures. And so really important time to take extra care of our homeless neighbors and support them so that they can come out of the winter healthy and okay and safe.
Gilmore says the area has had very few deaths over the last decade due to cold temperatures, and that he can only remember one. Ian Tyler Stark moved to Bloomington from Cincinnati before becoming homeless. He was found dead in December of 2013 during the North American polar vortex when temperatures dropped below freezing. Stark was found in a stairwell at an apartment complex on Bloomington's north side. Bloomington police were reportedly unsure of his exact cause of death, but ruled out foul play. The day his body was found, Stark was wearing wet clothing and temperatures reached a low of 20 degrees. He was 24 years old. Gilmore says that the low amount of deaths in the area is due to services such as the Interfaith Winter Shelter, Shalom Community Center, and Wheeler Mission. Just in Bloomington, the area's estimated 300 homeless will face the cold with the help of centers like Shalom.
Shalom does a number of things. We offer both a day and overnight shelter, as well as showers, laundry, meals, that kind of thing. We have several housing programs to help people move out of homelessness into homes, long-term homes. And we try and put all those services together to help people succeed in life. So a number of different supports, certainly with this time of year when cold is so strong, our emergency services are most pertinent in helping people get off the street and address the weather safely.
It's not just deaths that have decreased in the last decade. There are fewer cases of frostbite, and temperatures in the past that would have taken fingers and toes don't, due to services from centers such as Shalom. The center works with 200 to 300 people a day, Gilmore says, and they often can't receive the help they need because of negative attitudes towards the homeless and those experiencing poverty.
Well, we see in our center 200 to 300 people a day. We know that not all of those are homeless, but a significant number of them are. On any given day, we know that there's well over 300 people experiencing homelessness in our community, adults and children. There's a significant number of people that have this basic kind of threat to their existence there because of the weather. There's a lot of stigma, there's a lot of negativity directed at people experiencing homelessness and experiencing poverty. And probably the thing that I think is most valuable is to just recognize and own the humanity of every person, including people in awful circumstances, and to just honor them and support them and care for them and help them do better.
As temperatures drop, the needs that the center addresses shift. Gilmore and his co-workers are now tasked with finding weather-appropriate clothing in addition to providing basic needs.
At most basic, we provide shelter. So we have day shelter at the Shalom Center itself from 8 to 4 every day, and then we have overnight shelter at Friends Place, which is from 5 until 7 the next morning. So that's the most basic support that we provide for people in this time of year. But we also provide meals so that people can, you know, obviously be fed, and showers, laundry. But I think probably this time of year, what's most important in terms of how the community can engage is in terms of clothing. So making sure that people have proper winter clothing so that they can handle the elements when they're outside well. And so that's everything from coats, hats, and gloves, long underwear, sleeping bag, people have to sleep outside, blanket, things of that sort that really help, especially this time of year.
The center struggles with providing the resources those dealing with poverty and homelessness need in the winter. They don't receive as many donations as they need, Gilmore says, and some people have to go without.
We are definitely not able to keep up right now with the need for cold weather clothing, and so we absolutely need support there. Hats, gloves, and coat in particular. Long underwear is really helpful too. Sleeping bags are really helpful, but we're definitely not meeting the demand, and so there's people that are going without warm weather clothing. Sweatshirts are really valuable too at this time of year. Wool socks, you know, those kinds of things.
Those wanting to donate items can bring them to the center, located at 620 South Walnut Street in Bloomington, between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., 7 days a week. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.
Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Do you speak Chinese? I don't. And that's why I was very surprised to answer a call at work recently and hear a woman's voice stridently banging my ear in what was apparently that language. Of course it was a recording, a robocall, so I just made a rude noise and hung up. Well, it turns out that a lot of people have been getting these calls lately, including our news director here at WFHB, who's been getting as many as 5 a day. What a Chinese pain in an American you-know-what. There are several thousand Chinese-speaking people in our community. Many of them, of course, are students at Indiana University. Equally, of course, these robocalls are nothing but scams. One sort claims to be a call from the Chinese consulate trying to scare a Chinese person by claiming they have some sort of trouble back home or trouble with their visa. Another kind speaks of a phony package that some international shipper, often DHL, is trying to deliver. None of that is true. None of these calls are legitimate. And by the way, so far we've not found any evidence that they're somehow related to tariffs or trade wars. You've gotten robocalls, that's certain these days. In our 812 area code, every single phone got an average of more than 10 robocalls just during last September. This year, between February and July, the total number of robocalls nationwide more than doubled. By the time this episode of Better Beware ends, at least 400,000 Americans will have been robocalled. Just in the United States, the numbers are up to many billions every month. There are a few robocalls that you might want to get, appointment reminders, flight updates, and emergency notifications, but 99.999 times out of 100, a phone call from a machine is a fraud. So what can you do about it? Well, to start with, never respond and never answer your phone unless you're certain you recognize the number on your caller ID. Robocallers can now spoof caller ID and make it look like the call is coming from a local number. Let any call you don't recognize go to voicemail. That's what I do. And if the message is not a useful one or if there's no voicemail message, I block that number. Today, there are quite a few apps you can get for your smartphone that will block robocalls. You can find them online. Privacy Star, Mr. Number, or Calls Blacklist. There's Call Blocker for Android phones, or True Caller for iPhones, or UMail for visual voicemail. AT&T users can get AT&T's Call Protect, and NoMo Robo works on any phone, including internet-based landlines. Laws and regulations and do-not-call lists aren't solving the problem. It's up to you to be aware and beware of this electronic plague. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines are written by Rasha Kumhawi, Wes Martin, and Sarah Vaughan for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Annie Aguiar.
Our engineer today is Wes Martin, with assistance from Chris Hack. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news at WFHB.org. And stay tuned for the Hijabi Diaries, examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women. The Hijabi Diaries are coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.